Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view and to challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host again for this edition. Over the weekend, there was a second March for Our Lives rally in the nation's capital, with concurrent protests in at least 50 cities around the country. The first one was organized by students of the Marjorie Stoneman High School in Parkland, Florida, after a school shooting there when a gun owner entered the school and killed more than a dozen people with an AR-15 assault-style gun with several high-capacity magazines of ammunition. We were introduced to Emma Gonzalez, who now goes by the name of X and prefers they-them pronouns, and David Hogg, both survivors of the shooting, who gave memorable, impassioned speeches and have continued to be spokespeople for the Movement for Gun Law Reform. Hogg was harassed and followed by Congressperson Marjorie Taylor Greene near the Capitol building. She falsely claimed that he was not a student at the school at the time of the shooting. Gonzalez was the subject of sexual slurs and threats, and both have been accused of being so-called crisis actors. After the Parkland massacre, the students who organized the March for Our Lives rally made a number of demands, including more stringent universal background checks, bans on semi-automatic assault-style guns and high-capacity magazines, etc. They joined a host of other gun reform groups, including Sandy Hook Promise, a group formed by the parents of victims of another school shooting, and the gun reform group founded by former Congressperson Gabby Giffords, who narrowly survived a mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona. But in the last few years, indeed decades, hardly any gun regulations have been added or strengthened. Indeed, things have generally gone the other way, as gun proliferation lobbies, including the NRA, have compelled legislators in gerrymandered Republican states like Ohio to not only oppose gun reforms, but also to overturn previous regulations. Hence, it is now legal in Ohio to carry a concealed gun without any kind of application or registration process or training. And naturally, there have been some more mass shootings, including school shootings like the one a couple of weeks ago in Uvalde, Texas. The majority of these shootings have involved an AR-15, a high-powered semi-automatic rifle designed to look like and perform like a military-issue automatic rifle. In other words, it's a gun whose design is geared intentionally and specifically to inflict maximum casualties at a distance in the shortest amount of time. It's the popular choice among mass shooters in America. Most school shooters, and in particular, are white males under the age of 18. But a simple proposal to raise the minimum age for purchasing AR-15s from 18 to 21 has been blocked primarily by Republicans in the House and Senate. But with the latest school shooting following closely on the heels of a white supremacist mass shooting at a grocery store in Buffalo, New York, some Republicans, a small percentage, who have been utterly opposed to gun reform, have been willing to give a tiny bit and have hammered out a rather weak and watered-down bipartisan framework upon which a set of reforms can be based. Several of the Republicans who are in support of the process, it should be noted, are retiring and therefore not seeking re-election. As it stands, the framework does not include a call for banning AR-15s or even raising the age of eligibility to purchase them. It does call for more thorough background checks for would-be purchasers under the age of 21, and it eliminates the so-called boyfriend clause that allows abusive unmarried partners to avoid the so-called red flag rules that temporarily declare individuals convicted of sexual or domestic abuse of their eligibility to own certain classes of weapons. There's also some vague language about increasing funding for mental health services, something Republicans are also typically opposed to, except that the whole mental health deflection is a common Republican tactic for avoiding discussion of any actual reforms. So what are Republicans protecting here? The right to purchase and carry assault-style rifles, to own high-capacity magazines that hold 30 or more rounds, and the ability to purchase those the day after your 18th birthday, etc. Aside from banning AR-15-type guns, which wouldn't eliminate them all from circulation, but would merely slow their proliferation, the background check approach seems like the most viable path to achieving gun control reforms. But what would disqualify a potential purchaser? Would a background check only look at criminal records and previous diagnoses of mental illness? Or would they include reviews of social media posts and look for antisocial and violent ideation? Would racism and misogyny factor in? Background checks that are that discriminating would have flagged quite a few of the mass shooters of late, like the El Paso Walmart shooter or the Columbine killers. Could it be, however, that people on the political right would never agree to a working definition of such sociopathies? Or perhaps they hit too close to home and would render many of them ineligible? Some of the mass shooters obtained their guns illegally or were gifted their guns by unscrupulous and uncaring family members. Surely that describes Dylan Roof, who massacred worshippers at the AME Baptist Church in Charlton, South Carolina. Or Kyle Rittenhouse, who went hunting for Black Lives Matter protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Adam Lanza, the killer in Sandy Hook, used a gun belonging to his mother, a common dynamic in many teen suicides and accidental shootings. No gun regulation will completely address the threat, but as one of the parents of a child killed in Uvalde, who feels that the current bipartisan framework doesn't go nearly far enough, said, even a tiny crumb of reform, if it can potentially save even one life, is worth it. The dividing line grows sharper, too, in the wake of each high-publicity killing, casting opponents of reform and advocates for change on opposing sides of history. Today we'll hear from some of the folks on the side of reform who spoke at the National March for Our Lives rally in Washington, D.C.
To kick off this march, please welcome Chicago survivor of gun violence and March for Our Lives board member Trayvon Bosley, accompanied by Garnell and Raymond Whitfield, sons of Ruth Whitfield, who was tragically killed in the Tops supermarket shooting in Buffalo.
My name is Trayvon Bosley. I'm a member of the Brave Youth Leaders of St. Sabina and a board member of March for Our Lives. More importantly, I'm from the south side of Chicago, where 4 years ago I woke up to gunshots and police sirens, and 4 years later I wake up to gunshots and police sirens. Where 4 years ago I was burying my friends and family to gun violence, and 4 years later I'm still burying my friends and family to gun violence. I'm talking about Chicago, a city like many others, where 4 years ago our elected officials lied about listening to the demands of the community, and 4 years later city officials like Lori Lightfoot still lie about listening to the demands of the community. I speak for many Chicagoans when I say we are tired of hearing Chicago this and Chicago that from people and officials who've never stepped foot on the South and West Sides. We're tired of hearing from those who only come to Chicago to see the skyline or visit Navy Pier. People who know nothing about Chicago love to say, oh, Chicago has strict gun laws. What do mass shootings have to do with Chicago? Or Chicago's violence is gang-related. Let me clarify a few things. 60% of guns recovered from Chicago crime scenes come from out of state, which means so-called strict gun laws we supposedly have mean nothing if the states around us have lax gun laws. As for mass shootings occur often in Chicago, but instead of caring about the faces and the names affected, we're treated like nothing more than numbers who deserve to die. Now, as far as for Chicago shootings being gang-related, my cousin, Benson Avant, shot and killed while sitting in the car. Blair Hope, shot and killed on a bus while on his way home from school. Deontay Smith, shot and killed at a block party. Matthew Rogers Jr., shot and killed while leaving a club. Lanaya Murphy, one of our Brave Youth Leaders, shot and killed in a car. Hadia Pendleton, shot and killed in a park near her school. My brother, Terrell Bosley, shot and killed April 4, 2006 at church while getting ready for band rehearsal. Contrary to what many media outlets and officials want you to believe, these deaths were not due to anyone doing anything wrong, but people living their lives every day just like you do. But I'm speaking for more than just Chicago. I'm speaking for the places who are often left out about the conversation of gun violence, places where COVID-19 was not our first introduction to mass deaths and overcrowded hospitals. You know, the places where poverty rates were already high and living paycheck to paycheck is the norm, communities where school systems are underfunded and state penitentiaries are overfilled, where politicians are overpaid and anti-violence programs are under-resourced, where police officers are overtly racist and our so-called justice system rarely holds them accountable, places where, you know, where all lives supposedly matter, but black and brown lives are taken on a daily basis. This pandemic did nothing more than rip off the sheets of lies and broken promises covering the problems of impoverished communities across America. Gun violence is an America's problem, and for too long she has not valued the lives of the black, brown, and the poor. The injustices we see on the daily are being blatantly ignored by those on Capitol Hill. The cries of the nation's children can be heard across the world, and you choose to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to the lives being taken. Your job is to represent and serve all the people who call this country home. And so far, you've shown us you only represent the pockets of whoever donates the most to your campaign. Now, as for us, the community, after you leave this march, do not go back in your communities and relax. People are dying every day. There is work to be done. It is our job as a community to hold these officials accountable and do the on-the-ground work in the communities to end the gun violence. But I'll end with this. Gun violence is one of the only things in America that doesn't discriminate. And every day you do nothing about it while people die, gun violence is getting closer and closer to the Capitol. Thank you.
My name is Garnell Whitfield. I'm here with my brother, Raymond. I'm here with my family, my sisters, my grandchildren, my children, and other families who are victims of gun violence from Buffalo, New York, at the May 14th massacre at the Tops Friendly Market. We are still in a state of shock because we never would have believed that our 86-year-old mother, Mrs. Ruth Whitfield, who was buying groceries after visiting my father at the nursing home, her husband of 86 years, or the other well-loved, well-known stalwarts of our community, would have been treated so inhumanely as to be shot down like animals by an ignorant, hate-filled white supremacist armed with a weapon of war, an AR-15. But in reality, we are being naive to think that it couldn't happen to us. You know, and until it happened to us, we were sitting on the sidelines. I mean, we saw all of the things that are happening in our country. We see the loss of lives in our community, and we're empathetic, but we didn't do anything about it, which makes us part of the problem, okay? But the truth is, while we were naive and thought everything was okay, this nation was born out of violence, built by the sweat, blood, and tears of our ancestors, and propped up by a deep-rooted belief in white supremacy. Well, enough is enough. We will not go quietly into the night as victims. We will no longer accept the inherent inequities built into our society as our reality. We will not allow you to continue to steal the futures of our children and condemn our elders to a life of fear and uncertainty, where the comfort and peace that they have given their lives for is no longer available to them in the twilight of the years. We are here to demand justice. Yeah. Justice for those who have been martyred in this struggle, and action for those who are yet among us. You know, we hear a lot about prayer, and prayer is wonderful, and we thank you for your prayers. But prayer is not a noun. It is a verb. It requires action. You pray, and then you get up, and then you walk. You walk that walk. And so that's what we're asking people to do. We are here to stand with those who are bold enough to demand sensible gun legislation that will help to reduce the gun violence in our communities, that will stop the slaughter of our most precious commodity, people, human beings, sisters, brothers, fathers, grandparents, friends, and in my case, my 86-year-old mother. Let me be clear. Guns by themselves are only one aspect of a much more insidious problem in America. That's right. Let us never forget, while we focus on this gathering, and appropriately so, on gun violence, whose hands are those guns in? And what are they doing with them? Why are we sitting here pretending like we don't have a larger problem? These are ignorant individuals. You know, like the guy that had the gun in Buffalo, he pulled the trigger. But there are even sicker, more ignorant systems and people in high places that are arming them, that are loading the guns, that are radicalizing these people. They're filling them with weapons and filling them with hate-filled rhetoric, and through their inaction, they're giving them their tacit approval. If we stand here and we don't do anything about this and we don't call it out, then we are giving them our approval. We demand the passage of an anti-white supremacy hate crime bill, okay? Along with sensible gun legislation. And we're just simply here to say enough is enough. Thank you.
Enough is enough. Enough is enough. If not now, when? Will enough be enough? When will we as Americans no longer stand tacitly by, bearing witness to hollow point bullets searing from the barrel of an AK-47 tearing through the flesh and bone of the American dream, mowing down its future in a Texas school massacre where there lies Uzziah Garcia, youngest of 19, while the eldest of 10 victims, age 86, Miss Ruth E. Whitfield, lies helplessly on the floor of a Buffalo grocery store. A devoted wife of 68 years, never growing weary of her appointment, her last hours spent protecting the love of her life from what would be bed sores with a meticulous spread of A&D ointment. A Christian caretaker, grandmother, great-grandmother, best of friends that we call mom, lies bleeding in aisle 9. And yes, this time, this mom happens to be mine. But what of the next time? And rest assured, there will be a next time. 10 days later, from Texas to Tulsa, or just another weekend on a Chicago west or south side, countless others that we've lost soft count of have died. When will enough be enough for decent, law-abiding Americans to muster the courage to stand up and demand that our public servants begin to reflect what the greater populace has long since embraced, common sense gun laws, and a simple background check? Now, some of you will ask us, what is it we really want? What we want is a chance to heal America's most wretched, festering scar with an anti-white supremacy hate crime bill. It is time that we all come to see what the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has labeled the number one threat from sea to shining sea. That is the scourge and the myth of white supremacy. So let us implore our politicians, in the spirit of those who have forethought and ingenuity, to formulate a RICO statute in pursuit of organized crime. That is also time to strengthen the law of law enforcement, the ability to draw the line between those who would harbor, support, encourage, and yes, indoctrinate the most feeble-minded amongst us to do their heinous bidding as a misguided instrument of hate. If you listen closely, you will hear the cries of our fallen loved ones in our churches, our synagogues, our schools, and now our grocery stores. All I can say is, if there is to be a great replacement, I say let's not wait. Lower your weapons and let us replace the hate. Then and only then can we make America great. If not again, when? Thank you very much for allowing my brother, my family that's here, to share our grief and our unfettered determination to join you in this fight. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Addison Rose, and I serve as the D.C. Youth Mayor and the Eastern Region Teen President of Jack and Jill of America. Today, we are here to rally and march for the thousands of lives needlessly lost due to lack of stricter gun control laws in our nation. There have been over 246 mass shootings and 27 school shootings this year alone. It is imperative that we not only protect everyone's life, but especially the lives of children who are simply eager to learn and go to school to be educated, not afraid. Today, I will be introducing someone who has worked tirelessly to ensure safer communities exist in and around the Washington, D.C. area. Mayor Muriel Bowser has been pushing for D.C. to become the 51st state so that we can have a voice in Congress
on such critical issues such as gun control. She invested in our youth by expanding the Marion Barry Summer Youth Employment Program, which I am proudly a product of, which provides any youth up to the age of 24 years old with a job. In the fiscal year 2023 budget, she invested $13.5 million in Recreation for All, an initiative to expand recreational programs to keep youth safe and off of the streets. She also recently launched 202 for Peace, a campaign aimed to mobilize the community and bring together agencies across the city to accelerate efforts to reduce gun violence and other forms of violent crime through education, service projects, and community engagement activities. And as most of you all know, our fearless mayor went up against Trump and made history by creating Black Lives Matter Plaza, which began a trend worldwide during a time of great unrest in our country due to the senseless murder of George Floyd. Before I invite her onto the stage, I want to thank you all for being here today when we truly need each other now more than ever. And I hope you all continue the fight for stricter gun control laws and for our lawmakers to start doing what we all voted them in office to do, protect us. With that being said, it brings me great pride to bring up to the stage our extraordinary mayor of Washington, D.C., Mayor Muriel Bowser.
Enough is enough. I'm Muriel Bowser. I'm the mayor of Washington, D.C., your nation's capital in my hometown. I speak as a mayor, a mom, and I speak for millions of Americans and America's mayors who are demanding that Congress do its job. And its job is to protect us, to protect our children from gun violence. Americans in cities and towns all across our nation are scared and frustrated. Scared because we live in a country where just about anyone who wants a gun can get a gun. Frustrated because we have been here before, and we've been here before too many times. And we're not asking for a lot. We're asking to drop off our children at school without having to worry that someone will bring an AR-15 into their classroom. We are asking to go to the grocery store without worrying that someone will be shot dead by a gunman who is filled with hate. We are asking to let our children go to the playground without worrying that a car will drive by firing a high-capacity magazine with no regard for who gets killed. In fact, we're done asking. We're demanding change, and we're demanding change now. We need our fellow Americans, a majority of Americans who share our values, to let their senators know that they either need to make change now or get out of our way. We also need our fellow Americans to join with us in the fight for D.C. statehood. We are 700,000 taxpaying Americans in Washington, D.C. who want common sense gun reform. We're 700,000 Americans, and we have zero senators to represent us. This isn't just about our disenfranchisement. This is about disenfranchising all Americans who want change. This is about disenfranchising anyone who, in the words of the great Fannie Lou Hamer, is sick and tired of being sick and tired. We don't have to live like this. Our global citizens, they don't live like this. It is common sense to require background checks for guns. It is common sense to require red flag laws. It is common sense to ban assault rifles in our country. unfortunately, common sense ain't that common in the Senate. We represent the American majority, and we can't let anybody forget it. I want now to ask you, just like Addison did, don't stop fighting. When I look in the faces of our young people, we were here just a short time ago marching for our lives. And I know that the solution lies with you. You must keep marching, keep fighting, keep voting, and demanding action now. Now I have the honor of bringing up a young man, a graduate of Banneker Senior High School right here in Washington, D.C., a District of Columbia Public School. He's making us proud studying at Harvard, and he is the founder of the nonprofit Love One. He spreads love, advocates for gun reform and peace, and he is here today to help us march for our lives. Thank you, everyone.
Please welcome to the stage DC gun violence survivor and March for Our Lives organizer, Ruquan Brown.
Good afternoon. There are a lot of Americans out here. I said, good afternoon. There we go. There we go. That's the exact energy that we need to be able to solve issues like gun violence, but many issues beyond gun violence. My name is Ruquan Brown. I'm a 20-year-old student at Harvard College from right here in Washington, D.C. I'm extremely sad to be here today because I would much rather be on a cruise watching the NBA Finals with my stepdad or doing high school slash college things with my friends. But I have to be here because of a very disgusting and intentional ignorance from this city and this nation's elected officials. I have to be here. When I spoke with Mayor Bowser 2 years ago about creating safer spaces for black children and people in our city, she told me she'd handle it. If that were true, I wouldn't be on this stage. Since our elected officials are extremely ignorant, broken, and irresponsible, I said, since our elected officials are extremely broken, ignorant, and irresponsible, I've been left with no other choice but then to explore and discover what it's gonna take to keep me, my 10 siblings, my future children, you and yours safe. I thought that it might be through education, but we are unsafe in our schools. I thought that it would be through leisure, but we are unsafe on vacation. I thought that it would be through career, but we are unsafe at work. I thought it would be through politics, but we are unsafe at our capital too. None of these things alone will cure the fear that you, millions of beautiful people, have. Although I'm a Harvard student and should have some dissertation-level scientific solution, my middle school research has led me to a very simple four-letter solution: love. Love is a combination of care, commitment, knowledge, responsibility, respect, and trust. Many of our politicians approach stages with only one of those ingredients. We are demanding that our politicians love, and that requires all six of those ingredients. We must live in a nation where love is the norm. We must live in a nation where love takes us by storm. We must live in a nation where love keeps us warm, because that is what we deserve. Our politicians are committed to paychecks, and a lot of our people are committed to comfort. But thank you for being committed to change. When my stepfather was murdered in 2018, I asked myself why this might have happened. When my teammate was murdered in 2017, I asked myself why this might have happened. When I watched friends and family in my neighborhoods and in my friends' neighborhoods be murdered, I asked, why might this be happening? When my father, who was 20 years older than me, shared with me the stories of growing up in East Oakland, I asked, why are these things still happening? These problems exist in our schools, in our neighborhoods and communities because of America's lovelessness. We don't need only more politics. Our people need love. A few feet from here, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave us one of the most remarkable speeches of our time and reminded us that he has a dream. We are a manifestation of that dream. I am calling us to use more love so that our children can safely be a manifestation of our dream. I enjoy speaking, but more than speaking, I enjoy acting. I enjoy action. I enjoy doing work that serves people. I want you all to repeat after me. Use more love. Use more love. Use more love. You guys spoke, and now it's time for action. The way that you can get involved with serving black and brown people in our neighborhoods who are constantly murdered because our mayors, our council members will not stand up for our people, please go to usemorelove.com to get involved. Thank you.
Next, please welcome to the stage Manny Oliver, father of Joaquin Oliver, who was tragically killed in the 2018 school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, as well as David Hogg, March for Our Lives co-founder and board member and a survivor of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shooting.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here today. I think we all agree that we are very mad, and that's the reason why we are together. Okay, so let's keep going. After this rally, we have to keep working very hard on the streets, complaining till we see a solution. Now is my pleasure to introduce my adorable husband, Manuel, with our kid always in our heart.
Hola, DC!
That means hello, DC, just in case.
I was hoping to avoid having to attend a march like this one ever again. The reason I'm here is that our elected officials betrayed us and have avoided the responsibility to end gun violence. We cry Joaquin every minute of our life. We miss Joaquin. We work with Joaquin, for Joaquin alone. And today, from this stage and alongside Joaquin, we want to announce a new kind of call to action, because I think it's time to bring a consequence to your inactions. If lawmakers who have the power to keep us safe from gun violence are going to avoid taking action that will save our lives, then young people across this country, everyone who can hear my voice, should also avoid. Avoid attending school if your leaders fail to do their job and keep us safe from gun violence. Avoid a school if Senate leaders Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell fail to pass life-saving laws to reduce gun violence.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Avoid going back to school if President Biden fails to open a White House office of gun violence prevention so that we can finally give this issue the attention that it deserves. I need everyone to put your hand on your heart and take the avoid pledge. And please repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the legacy of all victims of gun violence and will avoid school until our leaders pass gun laws capable of bringing safety and justice for all. Avoid will create a social disruption. They asked for it. Good trouble! Woo. As parents of Joaquin Oliver, who was killed in the Portland shooting, we are calling for a nationwide strike of American students from all levels of education, from elementary education to college, to avoid going back to school until our elected leaders stop avoiding the crisis of gun violence in America and start acting to save our lives. Please visit iwillavoid.com. Be part of the Avoid movement.
It's time to pay for the consequence. You didn't listen to us. Now you're going to have to do what we are asking you to do. I will avoid. I will avoid. I will
avoid.
I will
avoid.
Thank you.
I hope that I'm able to go back to college because our Congress acts. Can we give a round of applause to Manny and Patricia? Come on, be louder than that. Thank you. Thank you. Can everybody say thank you, Manny and Patricia? Thank you, Manny and Patricia. They never get enough credit for all the work that they do, so thank you. I want you to think of somebody that you love. Picture them now. Your child, a grandchild, a mom, a dad, partner, spouse, sibling, or best friend. Where do they attend school? Where do they go to work or church? Or where do they pray? What is their name? What was the last thing that you said to them? Are there any family traditions or vacations or life milestones that recently made you smile? What is that person's name? Maybe they came with you to this march. And I want you to say their name, and I'll do it first as an example, and then you repeat after me. Sound good? So when I count down from three, this is an example, I'll do it first. You say the person that you just thought of. So one, two, three, Lauren is what I would say. Lauren has many fans. Including me. Lauren's my sister, for those of you that don't know. Okay, are you ready on three? One, two, three, Lauren! Now, let's say it one more time, very loud, so that every single senator in Washington, D.C. and across the country can hear you. One, two, three, Lauren! Now imagine your loved one is at a shopping center grabbing some lunch. It's the middle of the day. You get a notification that says shooting. That pops up on your phone with the name of a city where your loved one lives. You text and there's no response. You call, there's no answer. You repeat this 50 more times. Could you imagine seeing their name on a growing list of victims of gun violence? Unfortunately, many of us that are here can. That list has added 200,000 names just like your loved one since the shooting that happened at my high school in Parkland, Florida in 2018. There are too many people who have lived this gut-wrenching reality every single day. Because there are over 100 people who have loved ones that die from gun deaths in this country that this is not a simulation for, that this happens to and will happen to tomorrow, the next day, and the day after. And unfortunately, that could be your loved one. And maybe you don't have to imagine this because it's already happened to you. I'm here because I don't want anybody to live this nightmare anymore. No matter your politics, no one should. I'm here because, like you, I love this country. And for it to function, we need to understand that rights are power, and with power comes responsibility. All Americans have a right to not be shot, a right to safety. Nowhere, nowhere in the Constitution is unrestricted access to weapons of war a guaranteed right. We've seen the damage that AR-15s do when we look at the innocent children of Uvalde. Tiny coffins horrify us. Tiny coffins filled with small, mutilated, and decapitated bodies. That should fill us with rage and demands for change. Not endless debate, but demands for change. Now! Not tomorrow, the next day, or the next week, or next year, now! Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? You gotta be louder! Do you agree with that? Make sure that every single senator can hear you! Do you agree with that? Sorry, I'm so angry. Here's the reality. If our government can't do anything to stop 19 kids from being killed and slaughtered in their own school and decapitated, it's time to change who is in government. As we gather here today, the next shooter is already plotting his attack. while the federal government pretends it can do nothing to stop it. Since this shooting in Texas, the Senate has done only one thing. They have gone on recess. Now look, no matter if you are a gun owner or a Republican or not a Republican, we all agree we must act to stop this. How much longer are we going to debate this until we realize that we obviously have different opinions, but let's not let that stop us from doing the small thing, anything, even if it could stop the next just one Parkland from happening, because this is the cost of that. All of us agree that we must end gun violence. Every responsible gun owner, every single person, no American wants their kid to be in danger inside of their school or outside of their schools, and we must act to stop this violence. But you know what? This time is different. Let's declare it right now and say it with me loud. This time is different. Louder. This time is different. Hold up your signs and say it. This time is different. Manny, can you take a photo? There's no photographer up here. This, ready? Again, louder. This time is different. This time is different. This time is different. Okay, why is this time different? It's because since we marched in 2018, we passed over 150 pieces of gun safety legislation and laws since the first time that we marched that have saved lives. We raised the age to own guns in the state of Florida. You know how hard that is? In a Republican legislature where we were told as young people that you're never going to get that change. Guess what? We did. And if we did that in Tallahassee, we can do it on Capitol Hill and in our Senate right now. We required background checks on every gun sale in Virginia. We banned guns from polling places to protect our democracy in Colorado. We defeated more NRA-backed politicians as a group of teenagers and young people than ever before in American history in 2018. We have had the highest rates, some of the highest rates of youth voter turnout in American history. And you know why I know this time is different? Because not only do we have more Republicans and gun owners and Democrats and independents marching with us than ever before, the last time that I spoke in an event like this, we didn't have the White House, we didn't have the Senate or the House, and now we have all three. And that's because of you. Now it's time to get all of them to act. In 4 short years, we went from not having the Senate, the House, or the White House, and me even hanging up on the White House when Donald Trump's White House called me and said, we want to have a listening session. I said, we don't need to have a listening session. We need to have action. And in 4 years, the reason why I know this time is different is because I went from hanging up on the White House to going and meeting in the West Wing because we turned out and voted. We've changed culture too. Together, we made progress in Republican-led states that people told us was impossible. We brought proven solutions like violence intervention that was pioneered by Black activists and communities to the forefront of national policy and secured funding for those programs and research like never before. Lastly, we made the NRA financially weak and culturally irrelevant. The movement to end gun violence is more diverse and representative of the country than ever before, because it has to be. No one is safe in any community, no matter if it looks like yours or not. This time, responsible gun owners are aligned on the basic solutions we need to keep our kids safe from dying, and the Uvalde shooting, a majority of Americans say, the vast majority of Americans say that stopping gun violence is a top issue for them, because this is not a political issue, this is a moral issue. Not only do people, regardless of political affiliation, agree with their hearts and minds, they are mobilizing alongside us. Right now, marching with us are more responsible gun owners and Republicans and Democrats than ever before. Because we are united together against gun violence as Americans, first and foremost. We march and we make change. Let me tell you a story. After the Parkland shooting, then Republican Governor Rick Scott signed into law a 3-day waiting period for gun purchases and for a gun sale and raised the age to 21 from 18. This was one of the 150 pieces of legislation that we, all of us, not me,
us passed because you showed up. And I hear time and time again, David, these laws don't work. Let me tell you a story. These laws do work. And you know why? Because the law that we passed in Florida, my mother got a death threat that said, F with the NRA and you will be DOA. Yes, that's right. I can't say that on TV, though. But law enforcement used the red flag law that we created, that we passed in the wake of Parkland, to disarm the individual who sent my mom a death threat and threatened to kill her by a court order. Seems like these laws work to me. That law, because of us turning out, very likely may have saved me from having to bury my own mother. These laws work. People say that these laws don't work, and what's funny is, you know, there's a strong recent public health example that it lays out exactly what we need to do to prevent gun violence. Just look at the tobacco industry. We need to treat guns the way that we treated cigarettes 30 years ago. With cigarettes, we didn't just change the laws. We addressed why people wanted to smoke in the first place, and it can't be either or, it must be both. We have to address how people get guns and why they feel the need to pick them up in the first place. We must address the fact that the reason why communities like Parkland don't have shootings on a daily basis isn't because we necessarily have the strongest laws in the country, it's because we have some of the most resources in the country. Gun violence is a symptom of injustice. And if Parkland is safe, but Southeast DC is not safe, or Miami is not safe, we are not done fighting. Because we want every child and every loved one to be safe in every zip code, no matter if they have the same skin color or pray to the same God as us, because all of us deserve protection. We addressed why cigarettes were so easy to access, especially for poor kids and kids of color, and we stamped out the corruption, misinformation, and lies of big tobacco. And guess what? We're going to do the same thing with guns in the gun industry. Let's hold the gun industry to the same standard as we held the tobacco industry. We must answer, why are people so attracted to guns? Why do we buy the lies of the gun lobby that a gun equals safety when the opposite has been proven time and time again to be true? Why is it easier for an 18-year-old to buy a beer or rent a car or buy a gun than it is to vote? The common argument for these for not taking these basic steps is that criminals don't obey laws. No duh. Criminals don't obey laws by definition, but look, I will admit this to you, no law is perfect, but the shooter at my high school was not a criminal mastermind. He was a 19-year-old racist who legally obtained an AR-15. He did not have deep connections to the black market. The 18-year-old in Texas, the 18-year-old in Buffalo, they were not criminal masterminds with deep connections to the black market. They were barely adults that were able to legally obtain a weapon of mass destruction, and they waited until they were old enough to buy that gun. Let's raise the age. Let's raise the age right now. Let's raise the age. Even if we just prevent one more shooting, it's worth it because those victims could be your best friend or kid that you just named. The time for these petty arguments is up. Over the years, I have encountered my fair share of people who disagree with me. Some of them went so far as to deny me my own lived reality as a school shooting survivor and called me a crisis actor. But the reason why I know that this time is different is because I've gotten more messages than ever before from those same people that said, David, I'm sorry, we have to do something about this. We are working together to address this. As a country, we must heal and address why these shootings continue. We also must address the fact that mental health does have a role to play in stopping gun violence, but that racism is not a mental illness. Hatred, racism, radicalization, xenophobia are not mental illnesses. Two-thirds of gun deaths are suicides. Mental health does have a role to play in addressing that. We need to address the fact that black and brown communities are traumatized daily by gun violence, and they don't get the same resources or support that Parkland did. Every community deserves the support that Parkland got. Every community. Every single community. That is the role that mental health plays here. Let's stop using mental health as a scapegoat for confronting white supremacy in our country. Let's remember that the argument of just funding more mental health has been tried constantly again and again, and we do need to fund mental health more while recognizing racism is not a mental illness. But let's also recognize, after Columbine, they said, you know what we need is more good guys with guns in our schools. Let's think for a second, teachers feel the same way. Thank you to NEA and AFT for being here. I'll talk about you in a minute. We love you. Let's remember, there was a good guy with a gun at my high school. He only proved to be a coward with a gun. Let's remember that in Texas, Outside of the school, there were 19 good guys with guns, heavily armored and trained, and they failed. First responders need to be the last resort and not the first to saving our kids from gun violence. Because the reality is putting more cops in schools hasn't worked, and it won't, because it only is going to keep... Let's think about who actually is made more safe by that, but also realize that putting more cops in schools actually may be a form of endangering our students as well. For the students that don't have the privilege of having my skin color, or the fact that I am an American citizen. We need to stop these shooters before they get on campus and stop endangering the lives of our first responders, our students and teachers, because people on Capitol Hill don't want to do their job and protect us. Now, what I'm not demanding is that the government take your guns away. What I am saying is that we are neither pro-gun or anti-gun. We are all pro-peace. We have the same goal here of peace. Let's focus on what we can agree on. Assault rifles are designed only for one purpose, to be a killing machine. Surely, we should be taking as many steps as possible to make these deadly weapons harder to access and properly vetting every single person who desires to own them in the first place. Because if you want to have an AR-15, guess what? I want to have my classmates be alive right now. This time is different because we all see it a bit more clearly. Our enemy is not the left or right. Our common enemy is gun violence. Because I can respect those who don't agree with me all the time. What I can't accept, though, is the notion that there is nothing that we can do to stop gun violence and save our kids. We must act now! Because the children that are dying every day are not Democrats or Republicans. They are T-ball players and honor roll students with bright futures and big dreams. Every time one of their lives is being taken, someone is motivated to join this fight. We will work arm in arm with every single one of them. And when we win this fight in the end, our history will look back. And the only question that they will ask is, why the hell did this take so long? Because we will win. Peace will win. But it will take persistence. Young people did everything right. To the people who marched 4 years ago and are still marching today, we've done everything that has been asked of us. The movement is not broken. Our government is broken. And it's time to fix it. Many states have listened. The failure to pass a single set common sense gun law at the federal level to curb gun violence rests squarely with Washington, right here in the seat of our democracy, with the politicians who refuse to do their jobs and keep us alive. Because the status quo of letting kids die is profitable to them. The status quo of only sending your thoughts and prayers, only praying something bigger will come up in the news like Mitch McConnell is doing right now, enables them to stay in power. Mitch McConnell needs us to forget about this. He needs us to move on. But we can't, because the next kid or best friend or parent who dies could be yours. This summer, we change the status quo. Vote them out. Vote them out. Louder. Vote them out. Vote them out. Louder. Vote them out. Vote them out. I gotta save my voice. Vote them out. Louder! 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 Again! Vote them out! Vote them out! Okay, I think they heard us. And if they didn't, it doesn't matter. They're going to be voted out anyways. We know exactly what to do if the Senate fails to pass the Protect Our Kids Act or any individual law that stops the bloodshed in our country, as Manny just talked about. We will break voting records this November, just like we did in 2020 and the 2018 midterms. And young people are running to replace those cowards who only misrepresent us. Today, on June 11th, we are making history once again. What's more important to me is knowing that you will still be here on June 12th and beyond, because this can be the beginning of the end, but this is not the end. This is only the beginning and not the end. I'm going to ask you some questions, and I need you to say yes, so be loud so every senator can hear you. Can I count for you to be here on June 12th and June 13th and beyond? Yes! Can I count on you to be here in November and every November that we have an election after? Can I count on you to be here even when they say that the work in creating peace is impossible? Yes! Can I count on you being here no matter how long it takes, because peace takes persistence? Yes! Right now, I need you to stay in touch with us. This is the first of major actions planned in the lead up to this election and beyond, because this is the beginning and not the end of this march. So I need every single one of you to right now that's listening at home or in the crowd to take out your phones so that we can stay in touch with you. I need you to take out your phones and text NEXT to 954-954 because we need people to show up in Texas at Senator John Cornyn's office when I need you there. I need you to show up in Pat Toomey's office in Pittsburgh when I need you there. I need you to show up in Marco Rubio's office when I need you there. And the way that we do that is by everybody texting NEXT to 954-954. Again, that is NEXT to 954-954. That is how we are going to stay in touch and ensure that this is the beginning and not the end. We know what we are doing. We know what is next, and we have to continue to show up because we have a plan of what happens beyond June 11th, and I need you to continue marching and protesting with us beyond it as long as it takes. Every time that you don't feel hopeful, I want you to think back to your loved one that you named earlier. Think back to the people that are around you right now. Look around. Look at the person to your left and look at the person to your right. You are not alone. None of us are alone, regardless of whether or not you're a survivor or ally. We are not alone. We need to understand. I also want you to remember that America is not as divided as Congress. The most divided people in this country are not in the 50 red, blue, and purple states across the country. They're right here. They are 100 senators on Capitol Hill. Because we do have Republicans with us. We do have gun owners with us. We all want change. Either they unite behind the changes we're demanding, or we will vote them out because all of us do agree, left and right, gun owners and non-gun owners, that we must take action to save lives now. This time is different because you are still here. Thank you to all the survivors and the activists and the violence interrupters and the students, especially to the black and brown women like Erica Ford and Paul Murray and Congresswoman McBath and many others of the gun violence prevention movement who never get enough credit. Please give them a round of applause. The only reason this movement exists is because of the decades of work that especially women have put into this. Thank you to the National Education Association. Thank you to the American Federation of Teachers who are marching with us and into November and beyond. Thank you to the young, the old, the staff members of our movement, the organizers of our movement. Thank you to the progressives, to the moderates, to the conservatives, the millions of responsible gun owners who are marching with us today, all of those who are on our side and the same side, all aligned under one goal, which is that we are going to stop this violence, stop the death, and stop the killing. This time is different. This march is only the beginning, but we must continue to show up every year and vote. And show up. If you don't take one message from today, there are two things I need you to do. Vote and show up at your state legislatures every year. Show up at your state legislatures. Congress doesn't have its act together, and we're going to continue doing all we can there. But let's get the action that we can now at the state legislative level. Because I firmly believe right now in this moment in American history of great division and divide, I believe if we put our politics aside and focused on our mission and why we're here, which is our kids and the effort to create a more perfect union for them, that if we work together over the next 10 years and showed up every year voting on this issue consistently, showing up at our state legislatures and not just showing up when this is in the headlines or when there's a march, but showing up constantly by texting NEXT to 954-954, because that's how I'm going to stay in touch with you. If we did that and put our politics aside and demanded our politicians in Washington acted, we could cut gun deaths in half this decade. That would be 250,000 lives saved. 250,000 people like your best friend. But the way that we do that is by showing up every single year. So not only are we going to vote this year and march right now, we're going to continue marching and demanding action every single month, every single year, until no kid in any community, white, black, brown, undocumented, or an American citizen, until no kid has to live in fear of gun violence and no loved one has to live in fear of gun violence. Thank you, and let's keep marching. Thank you.
That was some of the speakers from this year's March for Our Lives rally in Washington, D.C. We'll have more coverage on this issue in future editions of this show, Conscious Voices, which airs at this time each week on your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis. I'll hope to see you all at the community festival coming up next weekend. Not this one, but the one after that, the last weekend of June in Goodale Park near downtown Columbus. I'll be there, and so will the radio station. We can use volunteers as well. Check our websites, wcrsfm.org and wgrn.org, to see how you can help us out with that effort. All right, take care. I'll see you all.